Hi, everyone. In 2026, the United States will be celebrating its 250th anniversary. During that time, educators will likely seek out opportunities to enrich learning experiences for students by focusing on the rich historic sites that define the foundation of our democracy. One such site, the National Mall in Washington, D.C., is rich with opportunities for teachers and students. We'll be discussing those opportunities in today's episode.
Welcome to Teaching Matters, a podcast exploring all things teaching and learning. Teaching Matters is produced by NPR affiliate WOUB Public Media in Athens, Ohio. And here is your host, Dr. Scott Titsworth, Dean of the Scripps College of Communication at Ohio University.
Thanks so much, Trinity. Today we have two guests joining us for a discussion about the National Mall. Catherine Townsend is president and CEO of the Trust for the National Mall, and Jeremy Goldstein is a 25-year educator and vice president for programs at the Trust. The Trust for the National Mall is a nonprofit organization which works in collaboration with the National Park Service to restore, preserve, and enrich the National Mall. Jeremy and Catherine, it's great to have you on the show. Thank you for your time today.
Thank you, Scott. We're honored to be here. Really excited to have this conversation with you today.
Yeah, likewise. I'm really happy to talk about the work we're doing and just give you a description of what we've been doing over the past 2 years, too.
Yeah, absolutely. I've spent a lot of time on your website. I visited the National Mall several times, and so it was all very meaningful to me. I think listeners are going to have a great time learning what the opportunities are. Catherine, let me start with you. Anybody that lived in certain parts of the Midwest when they were in middle school, they took a trip to the National Mall. And so people have an idea of what that is. But just to get everybody on the same page, can you sort of describe what the National Mall is and maybe a little bit about, you know, how LaFont and, you know, Mitchell and others contributed to its historic development to where it's at now?
Yes. Thank you, Scott. The National Mall is an interesting, you know, question. A lot of people don't realize that it's nearly 800 acres. It is the grass panels that are kind of iconic that you see when you look at, you know, the inaugurations, that's the grass panels that go from 3rd Street right in front of the U.S. Capitol all the way to the Lincoln Memorial and then Constitution Avenue all the way across to Jefferson Memorial. So the mall was built, a grand mall was envisioned during the LaFont design when they first designed the city. And at that point, there wasn't the extension from 17th Street out where the Lincoln Memorial is right now. That is all landfill to create more of a grand mall on the National Mall. So, mm-hmm. You know, there's been evolution of this space over the history. It's a fascinating history about what's been on that space, how it's evolved. When McMillan did the plan at the turn in the early 1900s, you know, that was, let's get rid of the busyness of what's happening and preserve it back into this grand mall so that people could gather. It's a gathering place. That's the definition of a mall. People think of a shopping mall, but it actually is about a gathering place. People can gather there. So I think it's just a beautiful vision. And so a lot of times people go, God, there's so much empty space. We could have a lot more memorials out there. But it's like, no, this is meant to be a preserved landscape in this beautiful historic landscape with a number of things that have happened over its history. There is historic buildings. There are beautiful monuments and memorials. The beautiful monument, the iconic Washington Monument. And then you've got the memorials. You've got presidential memorials. You've got the war memorials. You have the cherry blossoms that are becoming itself. It's an attraction that people gravitate to every spring. And so it's this beautiful landscape that has evolved over time and continues to evolve. But the stories that have been told there, the activities that happen there, people don't know, and this is an interesting fun fact, that 9,000 permanent events happen on the National Mall every year. Mm. And people go, well, there's so much empty space. There's nobody's out there. 9,000 permanent events. There's hundreds of thousands, millions of people out there every year. Well, there's 36 million visitors that come throughout the year. But there's also these incredible activities including sporting activities. Half of those 9,000 permanent events are sporting activities, and people don't even know that. But it's a beautiful place to come and learn because it's evolved over time. You have so much rich history to learn about that evolution. And then also just the stories that kind of shape the fabric of our country, these historic moments and the memories and with through the memorials to sort of honor those moments and people.
Mm-hmm. Fair warning to Jeremy, in a few minutes, I'm going to ask you about some of those stories, so be ready. But Catherine, before I turn to that, yes. Is just out of curiosity, is there a place on the mall that, you know, is your place where it's your favorite place to go when you're just wanting to sort of take it in?
God, that's such a great question, Scott. I've lived in Washington, D.C. for over 38 years. I'm originally from Southern California. And everybody calls the National Mall America's front yard. I call it my backyard. Our family did, because we lived on Capitol Hill and we experienced everything that was going on over the years. The kids, you know, everything you can imagine, you know, that happens out on the National Mall. These beautiful activations and the inaugurations and, you know, events, the fireworks, everything. I would say I gravitate to two places, but I think I'll use the one that I can't get enough of it. I go at night, top of the Lincoln Memorial steps. You sit on the steps and you look out over the vista, over the reflecting pool, over the knoll of the Washington Monument, you know, and look out to the Capitol. You can actually see so much from there. That's a beautiful spot. I can't get enough of it. It's just a beautiful view during the day and at night. And then the backside of the Lincoln. A lot of people don't go to the backside. Yeah. But if you walk around to the columns to the backside when the sun's going down, it is just this beautiful feeling that you have when the sun's setting on these beautiful columns that is sort of shadowing through to the other side of the mall. That's where it was called the Watergate, which is where the backside of the Lincoln was this gateway to come into the mall, the city, you know, through the water and the backside of the Lincoln. It's pretty spectacular. So I also have a great vista view from the steps of the Jefferson to the looking at the Washington Monument. So
I was going to say
lovely spaces there that I've explored and learned about in my since being at the Trust for almost 10 years now. It's amazing how much you can learn. You can always learn something new every time you go.
Yeah, I was actually going to say the reflecting pool, but I also love the Smithsonian, the castle, and sort of looking around at all the things that you can do in such a, you know, it's a big space, but all the things that you can do while you're just in that area pretty amazing. So,
well, and a lot of people need to realize, I mean, some people don't realize that the Smithsonian museums are not part of the mall. They're adjacent to the mall.
Right.
But that's so the mall kind of sits in this beautiful space that brings everybody in. And just it's lovely. We have a nice partnership with the Smithsonian, too. Because it's important, because we're neighbors, right? We need to all work together. And there's so many opportunities for people coming out onto the mall and going into the museums. It's an incredible space.
Catherine, let me ask you one more question before I bring Jeremy into the conversation. At the introduction of the show, I talked about the 250th anniversary. Are there certain things that the Trust is doing in anticipation of that happening next year, along with what I'm sure ongoing projects that you're always working on?
Yes, thank you, Scott. Well, we're super excited about the 250th. You know, the Trust has been in an organization for almost 18 years now, and we've invested over $100 million in the National Mall in three key program areas. We do a lot of restoration work and sustainability work with the Park Service. We have a focus on educational enrichment, and we have an incredible volunteer corps that helps the visitor experience. They're not just showing you where the bathrooms are. They're actually educating you on what you're viewing, what you're visiting, and they help you understand the history behind and provide really great additional fun facts and support to their questions. It's an incredible corps. We're very proud of them. For the 250th, we have worked for the last 3 years to address a huge need, which is what we're here to talk about. And we've created a fabulous digital education civic learning platform called the National Mall Gateway. And that is in honor of this spectacular, you know, this important anniversary year for the country, America's semi-quincentennial 250th mm-hmm. anniversary. And so we're excited. We've launched it this year. We're excited to get that out to the public across the world, but particularly interested in working with teachers and students because they're the ones that are making their pilgrimage every, you know, there's a lot of students in classrooms that make their pilgrimage to the National Mall, but there are a number of students in classrooms that cannot and never will make it. And we want to bring the National Mall to communities nationwide and around the world. So you can experience what everybody experiences in person. They can experience it virtually. Now, we know that virtual experiences aren't exactly the same as physically seeing and touching and being in presence. But if you can get inspired by that, maybe one day you'll come and mm-hmm. One day you'll visit and you'll get to feel that feeling and that brain will click. How important our civic history is and how important being an engaged citizen is to this country. So we're super excited. That's our big 250th legacy project. But we are also doing some fun activities out on the National Mall. We're part of a couple big openings. A teaser is the Lincoln Memorial Undercroft is the structure that's under the Lincoln Chamber, which holds up the Lincoln Memorial on the landfill. It's a cathedral setting on the Undercroft. It's beautiful. It's really interesting. And it's never been open to the public. And that is going to be coming to the public to witness themselves, to actually tour the Undercroft. There's going to be brand new exhibits. They've fixed the entire Undercroft to be a visitor experience. And the trust will be assisting with that visitor experience. So we're super excited about that because that is a whole new level of content and experience for people when they come to the National Mall. But the Gateway will actually be able to bring that new experience that's opening on 4th of July, to the public, nationwide and worldwide. So it's really a wonderful opportunity to kind of marry the virtual with the on-site experiences and create a much more robust educational experience for all visitors. Sort of the two highlights I would say that I would love people to take away is, the National Mall Gateway is a wonderful evolving platform mm-hmm. of information and resources about the National Mall. And then we've got some really fun things that are coming to the National Mall that are new the 250th year. And we anticipate a lot of visitors. And there'll be bigger show of fireworks and there'll be all sorts mm-hmm. of things. There's going to be a lot of things coming to the National Mall that'll be, people can find out about from our sites and other sites. But we're super excited to be celebrating this year. The National Mall, as you know, is the greatest symbol of our American democracy and mm-hmm. freedom. And we want everybody to feel they understand it. They know it. They know what's on it. They know all the different elements of it and really get inspired as citizens of this country.
Yeah, absolutely. It'll be exciting, for something like the Lincoln Memorial that if you've been to the mall, you visited that to see it have a new opportunity for engagement. Jeremy, turning to you, as I was going through the Gateway on the Trust website, and looking at that, it's easy if people don't take time to look at it to think it's going to be a bunch of tourism videos, and it's not. There's very intentional teaching and learning built into that. Can you kind of talk about what your role is with the Trust and how you're trying to make these, especially digital opportunities, available as a learning resource, not just something that, is sort of like a YouTube video about them all?
Yeah, and thank you for asking. I spent 25 years in the classroom and worked with ed tech, and I know that how educators feel about tech and whether they don't want it to be the leader of the experience, but an enhancer of the experience. So that's kind of where we started. But to rewind the whole effort, I came on 2 years ago, and we had just finished up some research with Deloitte to see where the need was, to survey a lot of other public lands and to really set up an idea of what is a digital environment that can be used both from a distance and on site, and also honors the fact that we don't want students and educators walking around the mall with their phones in front of their faces. So mindful of screen time, mindful of the ethics of use of technology, we built a team of three educators, myself and two other classroom educators, you know, with over 50 years of classroom experience. And we really took to heart in the design process that there is a need for an education platform based on the National Mall. It is such a unique space in that it is a First Amendment space. And it's also, it's an active space where there are protests, there are kickball games, there's all sorts of stuff going on at the same time. And that's a unique piece. And it's a container for the American story told in so many different ways. Each monument and memorial is a different era, commemorating another era. So, you know, what there's two layers to every monument. It's like when it was built and what actually happened. So we wanted to honor both the history, but we also felt like there was a definite need to immerse ourselves in the civic learning space. And just to give you, you know, one stat, you know, in 2023, it was found that only 22% of eighth graders were proficient in civics. That's to me a serious deficit. As you know, one of those Midwestern students, I took the Constitution test in eighth grade, and I remember how, you know, I stressed about it, but I also had to learn what a bicameral Congress was and what the branches of governments were, checks and balances, although kind of hard to understand as an eighth grader. I knew what those things were, and we really wanted to get into the stream and the environment of those things. So the gateway is that response. The National Park Service has a wonderful informative site about the visitor experience. We wanted to take that information and turn it into a tool for educators. And the two principles that I walked in the door with at the Trust were save educators time and make it free to educators. And those were things that we really kept centering on as we did the design process with developers and other teams.
Mm-hmm. I'm sure it took a lot of work, but you know, one of the things that jumped out to me as I was looking at some of the content is that, for instance, there are reflection questions built in, you know, that teachers and students can use. It just goes to show the point that you just made that, you know, there is intentionality behind what the gateway is serving as a function versus other, you know, online representations of the mall. So I just want listeners and viewers to understand that this really truly is an educational resource that is also interesting. You know, even if you're just a casual observer, mm-hmm. or, you know, listener to the podcast, not wanting to use it in a classroom, you just want to learn about the mall, this is a great resource for them to do that. Jeremy, before I turn away from you, given that you've immersed yourself in, you know, sort of the narratives behind, you know, the different things that have happened over the course of history at the mall, the different places, the different events, are there stories, like if you were, you know, if you had a captive audience and you said, here's the story that surprised me, made me most excited, that I think is most interesting, what's your favorite story?
Well, to point back to the platform as well, we have an area called Mall Moments, and that is the commemorative events that aren't carved in stone. Mm-hmm. And that's something to understand, is that, you know, there are things that occurred on the mall that are pivotal events in U.S. history, pivotal events in international history as well, that don't really have a marker. And they don't have an engraved piece. I learned something new about the mall. There's sort of the Atlas Obscura, you know, the sort of interesting pieces. My favorite question to ask visitors is what's the top of the Washington Monument made of? Hmm. And a lot of people don't realize that this precious metal, aluminum, at the time was a very important piece to put it on there. But there's a lot of these little facts, but the factoids, if you call them. One of the things is I started working on the Trust and dug deeper into the story because I knew the story as an educator. But the Marian Anderson story of her performance on the front steps of the Lincoln is something that really we highlight it. We have the video of the performance after being barred from Constitution Hall and with the support of Eleanor Roosevelt. That to me is it's such a story that, you know, you're kind of surprised by the date where that event occurred, like 39, before a lot of the civil rights movement in the 60s and later on that took place on the mall. And to me, that felt like a very not only a moment of public performance and arts, but also a huge, I'd say, benchmark for the country as well, in that she had the opportunity to stand on, we call it America's civic stage and the front yard, the nation's front yard, and to deliver an artistic performance that was also highly symbolic at the time, politically and in terms of civil rights.
One of the stories that I have that's interesting is that the person who designed the Vietnam Veterans Memorial is a graduate of Athens High School here in Athens, Maya Lin. Yeah. And
That's cool.
Yeah, it is. And
high school piece, yeah.
Yeah, and it's so and just the story behind, you know, the way that she designed that, and it was not without controversy initially when it was unveiled, and then quickly became embraced. And of course, there's the traveling wall that is a feature that many veterans, you know, even if they're not Vietnam veterans, will orient towards as it goes around the country. So that's my little factoid that is fun to do. We actually have at Ohio University's campus, we also have some work that Maya did since she was from Athens.
Shout out to Athens High School then. That's great.
Yeah, absolutely.
I'm gonna add
that
to the tour.
Like, so Athens, we have High her and Joe Burrow, the football player that is our claim to fame. There's many more, my daughter, you know, that kind of thing. But those are the two big names. I appreciate the stories that you told, the fact that you pointed out that those stories are on the gateway. And so listeners, you know, and viewers, again, that's just a reason to go to the gateway and explore it so that you can learn some of these interesting narratives that sort of backdrop them all. Catherine, in terms of the digital resource, the gateway itself, but then also other projects that you're working on, I assume this is continually evolving as you build more content out. So, you know, is there a vision for what your emphasis is going to be with the digital storytelling surrounding them all?
Yeah, I mean, yes. This is an ever-evolving site, right? There's more information. We wanted to get it launched. The team did such an amazing job of pulling together. It's not all-inclusive of every single thing that's ever happened at the mall, but we're working together with the Park Service to just create that robust experience and really trying to make sure people know what's on the mall. A lot of people just don't even know what the different monuments and memorials, some of the most basic things. What are the monuments and memorials that are out there and the historic buildings? There's a beautiful little house out there called the Lockkeeper's House. Mm. That's the oldest structure on the National Mall. People don't even think, what? So we want people to know that was the very first structure. It served a very important purpose. It was the home for the lockkeeper. And people go, what's a lockkeeper? So that was because Constitution Avenue was a canal. Mm-hmm. And where the house stands right now, which is just adjacent to the White House ellipse, you know, at 17th and Constitution, is that was the entry point to the to the District of Columbia a long time ago. And so they needed to, you know, take their tolls and they lived there. And then it evolved over time. The house moved a little bit. And then we ended up restoring it back to its original materials because it had transformed and become just a boarded up 40 years boarded up with no activity. And it just looked like an eyesore on the National Mall. And the trust took it on in 2018 and restored it, moved it away from because it had moved a couple times and it was right next to the street, moved it away from the dangerous corner. And now it's opened up and we made it a little mini museum. So you can go in there and learn about the history of the National Mall. It's a 6-minute video and it's super fun for kids. There's a little light show and stuff like that. And so you've got to make your stop there. And it's run by our volunteer program. And it's just an incredible, like, starting of your tour of the mall. But so my point is there's so much to learn and just that alone. And the video is actually on the gateway. So that, you know, you can't make it to the Lockkeeper's House, but you really want to know the history of the National Mall. It's this wonderful video you can watch on the gateway. So there's just different things that are evolving. You know, for example, Jeremy mentioned the AIDS quilt. That was one of the historic moments on the National Mall. The other one that was similar to it was the white flag, the COVID flag memorial display that happened a couple of years ago, which overtook the Washington Monument area. We don't have a card yet on that one yet, but those are stories that will keep adding to it because there's so much And that's why, you know, obviously we're trying to build out the team. We're building out the resources. We want this to be a sustainable, technology. It's not a one and done. It needs to evolve. Jeremy and his team have a bunch of ideas and vision around how we can actually, you know, how do you map even better? Like, how can I, with my family, or a teacher with her classroom, decide we only have 30 minutes because we've got to go to all this other stuff in Washington, D.C. What can we do on the mall for 30 minutes? And we, kids, what do you want to see today? Well, we want to see the cherry blossoms and the Lincoln. Okay. Well, we can map out our wrap, a roadmap to that, where we can walk and visit things along the way and do a 30-minute bus drops us here, the bus hooks us up here. And then maybe we can sign up with the trust to have a volunteer meet us along the way and give us a little tour. So there's all this great things that we want to, that is evolving on the site now, and that could be part of the future of the site where, you know, like I envision, you know, I talked to Jeremy. I said, how do we use the house as sort of a classroom? Like, we can like reserve a spot in that classroom in the mornings for 20 minutes. And we have classrooms going in and out and in and out because they can feel like they get to have their start at the Lockkeepers and learn about the National Mall and then go on their way on their tours. And the fact that you don't have to do the mall in one day. If you're there for 5 days, how about little things throughout your week, right? How do you create a really wonderful tour? And even a class, and the same thing goes for virtual with the classroom. How can they create a virtual classroom series, you know, with their class on some topic? So we've got a lot we want to do with the gateway. We also have a lot we're doing to complement additional enhancements at the mall itself. We've got a big project right now that we're still fundraising for, because when we fundraise for the projects, we actually run the project. We hire the design teams, the construction teams, and we do the restoration. The Park Service just does not have enough money in their budget. So a lot of people just assume, well, it's free. It's free to visit. It's not free to maintain or to restore. So it does take a lot of work, a partnership, public-private partnership, to make those new spaces come alive, like what we did with the Lockkeeper's House. And now we have another one, which is the memorial to the 56 signers at Constitution Gardens. That 36 acres parkland is going to get completely lifted and restored to a beautiful environmental sustainable space. The lake and the memorial will be enhanced, and just a beautiful park for people to enjoy while they're visiting these monuments and memorials and these beautiful landscapes. So we've got a lot of projects ahead of us, but with the gateway, there's a lot of evolution with it, which is so great. And of course, every time there's something new in a year, you want to be able to include it as a potential learning lesson. So.
That's actually a really good segue, Jeremy. In addition to the gateway, which I, you know, you've been actively involved with, there are some other resources that I noticed that you may or may not have been directly involved with, but I'm sure you're familiar with them. One of those being the virtual classrooms that Catherine just mentioned. And then also, there's a World War II app that, you know, I actually think we did a podcast about that a couple of years ago, but maybe if you could talk about some of those additional resources that people could access through the trust.
Yeah. And I think it was it the World War I with the AR?
Yeah.
Actually, we have great conversations with them. We actually have the World War I monument on our site. So we connect to the Doughboy Foundation.
Yeah.
Great partners. A really awesome tech conversation going on between the two of us. I think one of the things that Catherine touched on as well is that our site is designed to be the lowest barrier to entry for anyone. So this is an education site, but we also were defining what an education group is, and that's the family as well. That's across the spectrum of homeschool, parochial, independent, public. So we really want to satisfy all those audiences with this site, and the visitor is part of that education experience as well. So it's a really important piece there to make it as easy to use as possible. With some of those partners, and Catherine mentioned the 56 signers, we've had a great developing partnership with the National Constitution Center, and those organizations have great, robust content that teachers want. And we're trying to make the mall as a leap off point to connect to those partners, to add value to the whole experience with more. Want to learn more? want to watch some of the videos that they provide. There's all these great opportunities to link to the greater civic learning universe with partners like iCivics, the National Constitution Center, Center for Civic Ed. I could list a whole lot of them. They're listed on our site, but in the evolution of the content and in the evolution of the content with the National Park Service, there are volumes of things that we can put on there and many organizations that we, you know, we could spend a lot more time looking and searching, but we also find that we have some organizations that are longstanding, respected organizations who are partnering with us on this as well. And that World War One piece, they have a piece of technology that you probably interviewed about is AR, augmented reality. We don't have that on the site yet. We actually made a conscious decision to do a lower bandwidth decision of the mall's Wi-Fi can be, and the you know, the signals can be challenging sometimes. But what we wanted to do was just a browser-based optimized for mobile and desktop, something very easy to get into, very easy to connect with.
Yeah, makes sense. Catherine, the last question that I have, unless there are other topics that the two of you want to bring up, in a broader sense, the trust itself is also a resource. So you're protecting a resource, which is the mall, but the trust obviously is also becoming a resource for people. And that also means that there's opportunities where individuals can work with the trust. And so obviously you have to fundraise, as you mentioned, because we visit for free, but it costs money. But in addition to the fundraising component, what are other ways that individuals might be able to work with the trust on a volunteer basis? And maybe even so far as if I was bringing a group of students to Washington, is there something that I could do in advance to, you know, bring service to the trust and help with the National Mall?
Yeah, no, that's really interesting, Scott. I'm glad you brought that question up. It's you know, I'll use the analogy that, you know, the National Mall, there's no barriers to entry. There's no entry gate. It's one of the few national parks. And this is something that's interesting for people to know. It is a national park. A lot of people think it's just the mall. And then you've got the national parks that the outdoors, wilderness types parks, but it is a national park. It's within the national park system. And we're one of the, like, I think one of two parks that you can just enter from anywhere. You know, there's no gate, there's no parking. And so we love to say there's no barrier to entry, and everybody can experience it. Everybody has a role. Everybody can be a part of this space. It is America's front yard. It is this great symbol. So, we want people to connect with it in any way that's meaningful to them. Everybody has a different story, as we've all been sharing. And so letting people come in and say, you know, I'd love to help, or I'd love to share, or I'd love to, we're always open for that. I think there's a couple things. Obviously, we're always looking to raise money. We're a fundraising organization. We can't do our work as a nonprofit without programmatic dollars to help ensure the success of our programs. And the Gateway is funded. We got a huge, beautiful gift to seed the project from HP Inc. and HP Foundation. They are just been an incredible partner in the education space. And so just wanted to give them a nod. GE Aerospace is also a big partner and has been very helpful to get it off the ground. But obviously funding going forward is going to be critical for us to make sure we're sustaining it and growing it and evolving the content with the Park Service. They don't want it to go away. So we always say we bring private funding. We always talk about expertise. So if people have expertise in an area, it's really helpful. So for Jeremy, you know, we've built an advisory council for the Gateway, and experts in this field have been wonderful for us. And so there might be areas of support there. We have our volunteer corps that volunteers regularly on the National Mall. Sometimes you can just be an annual volunteer. You come in just to volunteer for a week and then go back home. We call it Mall Hands on Deck, where we actually do service days with groups. And that's post the pandemic, we're starting to build that out a little bit more, especially as we go into the 250th. There's a lot of interest in that, but there's also not a lot of projects for volunteer big groups to come in. They usually get it done pretty quickly, but there's some fun stuff there. Just sharing ideas. Like we learn new things from folks, like, hey, I have this idea, I'd love to share. I think this could be helpful to the National Mall and the trust operations and our different work. So we're always looking for innovative ideas for how we can address the issues and the needs of the National Mall and have the greatest impact. So I think part of what we're thinking about with the Gateway is how can people sign up for things? How can they, you know, they can see when they're coming in and then we can connect, and maybe there's a program in advance where Jeremy and some of the team, you know, can actually connect with the teachers and the students and the families that are wanting to come in and get some prep before they arrive. So those are different elements and expansion of our program that could be really valuable to the American public.
I'd also want to add, Scott, I think one of the interesting things as we're only, the Gateway is 3 months old. Launched on Constitution Day, September 17th. And as Catherine mentioned, we were kind of 3 months earlier because we were thinking of launching it in 2026, but why not put it in the school year or the year before, right? One of the things that we have, if you do go to the site, gateway.nationalmall.org, educators can sign up for our email cadence and our emails. Yep. And what they can do right now, since we're building usership, is they can also sign up to be part of the Teacher Advisory Council. Mm. So contributing to that. And I'll just do a little bit of a nerd out education-wise here, is that, you know, we were very intentional about using proven theories of experiential education with preparation, activity, and reflection as the model for this site. And we really took a lot of time thinking about the pedagogical implications for educators to make them see that, you know, there's neuroscience backing that, the Kolb cycle of experiential ed. And that's really important to note. And it's very helpful. And it's kind of foundational for educators to make learning sticky. And we hope that that works. But we also need to hear from our educators. And that's how they can contribute to the discussion. Yeah. I hate to say sign up, but we need to know who you are. And we need to hear feedback. We're educators. Mm-hmm. We love feedback. We give it and receive it all the time. So that's kind of our thing. And I would also say, you know, this is an access effort as well. We want people across the 50 states, 6 territories, and worldwide to be able to visit the mall and on the our 360s and the district. Yeah. And to visit our mall, either virtually or to do some pre-work. We are working with a couple of tour operators who are setting the Gateway to folks to do the pre-work to learn a little bit more about what they're going to see. And then, as you mentioned, Scott, we have reflection prompts in every one of our areas. And if teachers sign up to the platform for the teacher area, we have lesson resources. And we don't even call them lesson plans. These are pieces of resources that educators can pile on and they can stack. They're very creative people, having been one. Tooting my own horn, but we want to give them the opportunity to build their lessons with the mall as that anchor or that container. So, yeah.
Yeah, very good. Well, I'll let you know that my daughter is an 8th grade social studies teacher, and I'm going to make sure she has
this.
Make sure she's
We'll
give her a special tour.
Awesome.
Yeah, yeah.
No, I would just add, Scott, that I think to Jeremy's point, we really want to know what people think. We want to hear from them. So when you say how they can contribute or help, it's like, we want to just hear the feedback. What's working? What's not? What do they like most? What do they think we're missing? Because we do want this to be a wonderful resource for all. So,
yeah. And the data is showing that it's popular. We got a lot of people viewing it in the first 3 months. You know, we've 13,000 views, a lot of people engaging. But we want to hear more about what's the stuff that people want, because as Catherine mentioned, it's evolving. So,
absolutely. Well, we will help you out in that regard. If you're listening or watching the podcast, the link to the trust will be in the text accompanying the podcast. And once you get there, because there's so much content there, but obviously getting to the Gateway is very easy once you get onto the trust website. So we'll have that linked for listeners and viewers so that they can visit and learn more about it and start exploring it. And as you said, providing feedback. I just want to thank both of you for your time. Possibly ironically, thinking about, you know, sort of my experiences in Washington, I think it's so easy to sort of metonymically reduce Washington to politicians, right? Mm-hmm. And every time that I've been there and just walked out on the mall, you start to realize that whatever's going on right now that might give you a certain slant in how you view Washington, it kind of goes away for the time that you're on the mall, because you just feel the history and you realize that the American enterprise is so much bigger than any moment in time that you're currently in.
Absolutely.
And so I really appreciate that. And
we like to say it transcends, like the mall transcends all things that are happening.
Absolutely.
It just really takes you in another place. We've so many amazing feedback from people what they feel and how they connect. It's an incredible place. Yes.
Yeah. The emotions of places, I think is the National Mall is one of those places. There are others obviously in the United States, like the Trade Center site where there is an emotion tied to it that will always be there. And the National Mall certainly that. Thank you both for giving me your time today and also the work that you're doing in support of our, you know, probably our most iconic, you know, piece of a real estate that defines American democracy.
No, Scott, thank you so much for having us. I did want to offer the nationalmall250.org for anybody wanting to just pay attention to what's happening with the 250th next year, if that's helpful to your viewers, to your listeners.
Thank you, Scott.
We're taping this for listeners, just so you know, we're taping it. It's going to be released after the holidays, but we're taping it right before the holidays. So I want to wish both of you happy holidays.
And you as well.
Thank you. I'll get to, when I get to Washington, podcast. I'll
thank
look you up.
Thank you so much.
Yep. All righty. Bye-bye.
Take care. Bye-bye.
Take care.